Initiate Cowrat Podcast. So last time we talked about the quote-unquote survival trip that we that took my boys to my aunt's farm with my brother. But that kind of spurred another one. So my two oldest boys have their best buddies in the world are a couple of boys that they know and your son.
Yep.
So kind of the five of them have been a gang for several years. And they came to me with the idea of doing a bigger version of this survival camp out with their buddies. And I know my younger two boys obviously would want to go with. And part of me is always like, well, I got to be fair. And if I'm going to go all the way to this campground in Wisconsin that's 3 hours away that we like to go to and spend the money and the time off of work, like, I'm going to get everybody in one shot. So we're bringing your brothers with. They didn't necessarily want that. But so then we brought my two younger boys and a friend of theirs. And so it was me and two dads and all of our boys. And you didn't come with, but your son did.
Yep. The basic premise of the previous camping story survival thing was spawned by the book The Hatchet. So your oldest son was enthused about that. I know. Let's go into the woods with just a hatchet.
Right. Yes. Yes.
And, you know, sleep overnight and that whole thing. So this is 2.0 of that endeavor with the boys being a couple of years older.
Right. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. And they wanted to bring their friends along this time. And one of the dads, he's told me, he's like, can we get like a cabin for the adults? Because he's not into camping. And so I'm like, yeah, this place has cabins. So the plan was the dads would stay in the cabin. It's rustic. It has no electricity. It actually had gas lanterns on the walls, which is kind of cool, I thought. But it was very dim. But and it had a kitchen with gas-powered refrigerator and stove, which I've never heard of a gas-powered refrigerator.
Yep.
Apparently it's a thing. But the plan was the boys would all stay outside, build their own shelters. Again, we brought food. None of us were interested in trying to find food in the wild. So the guy who runs this campground in Wisconsin, it's called the Wilderness Fellowship Ministries. I always feel like that is way too long of a name for a place, but whatever. It's run by Christians. It's a very Christian-oriented, if you read their website. One of their rules is, like, don't bring any electronics. That's not what this place is for, you know, unless it's facilitating worship or Bible study or something, you know. So I was talking to the guy who runs the camp, because we've gone there once or twice a year for several years, me and Linda, or us and the kids. And so I was talking to them about the idea of doing this survival camp out while we were there 1 year. And he said, yeah, we actually had a group that came out and did the same thing. And they brought a live chicken for each, like, little group of kids. And they had to slaughter it, cut all the meat out of it, cook it all themselves. I mean, I don't know how much help they had from the adults. But I was like, oh, that's interesting. I have no interest in trying to slaughter a chicken. This is not in my world. I've never been hunting. I've never had to cut open an animal and find the food inside and figure out what to do with it. This is all seems weird to me, but again, not against it, just a little overwhelming to me personally.
Yeah.
I was chatting with the other dads about it, and one of them, he's like, oh, and I just mentioned this not as an idea that we should do it, but just an interesting story when I was talking to the guy who runs this campground. And he says, oh, that's a great idea. I'm like, and I said, oh, whoa, I'm not suggesting we actually do it. And he's like, I think we should.
I bet that was the dad with the twins, right?
Yes.
That's something he would say.
Yes. Because he said, yeah, I grew up. We did this every summer. I've slaughtered hundreds of chickens.
Yeah.
Like, okay, then you can be in charge of that part. And so some neighbors we have, they raise chickens. And so we went and bought a couple chickens the night before, or was it the morning of? No, it was the morning of. They loaned us a cage to get them there. They gave us some food so they could eat, you know, before their demise.
Last supper.
Yeah. That's right. And I got a picture of my youngest son with a knife and a fork licking his lips, staring at the live chickens. So anyway, we got these chickens and we had a trailer full with, we brought a couple of canoes so they could go out on the lake and go fishing. And that was part of the idea, was they wanted to catch some fish and eat them too. Didn't catch any that we could eat. But I thought, well, the chickens could ride on the trailer, but we're going to be going around like 75 miles an hour. That's probably mean to the chickens. So I guess they're riding in the van. And one of the other dad, he was going to ride with me, and he opens the door, sees two live chickens. He's like, nope. He rode with the other group. We brought two vehicles, but
I draw the line at chickens.
Right. Just being in the same enclosure. So when we got there, talk to the guy who runs the place, and they have three group cabins. You can fit like 12, 16 people in them. They have multiple bunk beds. There's one of the cabins you have to park, and then it's like a 5-minute walk. They call it the wooded cabin, I think. The one I know that you came with the one year we took the church group, that cabin that you had to walk to. In the winter, you have to walk to it. That's the lakeside cabin. But during the summer, you can drive right to it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
This one, all year long, there's no road. It's a bumpy walking trail, so they don't have a road. But he says, so you said you want the wooded cabin. And I say, yep. He's like, you specifically want the wooded cabin. And I'm thinking, like, why is he, I don't understand. Like, why does he keep asking me, like, are you sure? Later, I discovered that the lakeside cabin, which we could pull our cars right up to, was open that weekend. If he would have said that, I would have said, yes, we would rather have them. But I don't know. Miscommunication, I guess. Anyway, so we parked. We made several trips hauling all of our gear and whatnot to the cabin. So there was the older boys group and the younger boys group. The older boys, they was like, we don't want to stay anywhere near this cabin. We want to hike into the woods and find a cool spot. And we're like, all right, that's cool. You guys are big boys. The younger kids, we felt like they should at least be in visual proximity to us at the dads. So that was fine with them. The first spot they chose, like, look at this. This is a perfect little space, you know, soft grass. And I said, you know why the grass is so lush and soft? And they're like, why? He's like, because this is kind of at the bottom of a bowl-shaped piece of ground. If it rains, you're going to be swimming.
You're in a bowl. Bowl's going to fill up. Ain't no way out.
Right. So they changed their minds. They went up kind of at the top of it more. And there were, like, dead logs and trees everywhere. That was the other thing is I had asked, like, can we cut down any trees? And they said, no, but there are plenty of dead trees and logs of all sizes. So you can use those for whatever you want. So they kind of made a sort of half teepee leaning up against a tree. I helped the younger boys by tying it off because they were just, I could see giant logs falling on top of them. And if they kicked them, or they were just barely balanced. The older boys, so they hiked a ways a little bit. And all we had for shelter for the boys was tarps and sleeping bags. Like, I was like, that was it. We wanted to go bare minimum. And I'm like, well, it'd be nice if they didn't get rained on and soaked.
Yeah.
It did rain for a little bit. One of the dads, he says, he told the boys, he goes, all right, boys, so this is a survival camp out, right? This is your survival camp out. And they said, yep. They said, but there's a cabin right here. And they said, okay. And he said, so this is the scenario. If you guys enter the cabin, you discover that a murderous psycho lives there and you immediately get shot to death. And you don't survive. So you can't come in the cabin. You have to stay outside the whole time. They're like, okay, whatever. Which was fine at first for them.
If we're going to play this out.
Right, yeah. And again, we brought targets to shoot at with bows and arrows. They also brought airsoft guns. So, you know, like somebody brought a rabbit and a deer cutout that they made. And of course, all the fishing gear because they wanted to go fishing. So I think it was the second day that we slaughtered the chickens. And I was trying to decide, I'm like, there's bears in this part of the country. I've never seen one, which is slightly disappointing to me. I'd love to see a bear in real life. And we've been told by the people there, like, if you see a bear, not to worry. They don't like people. They don't really want to encounter people. They don't like it. And they don't really come to this area much because there's a bunch of people here usually camping. And they have rules about where to put the food and how to keep it so the bears can't get to it. And
right.
So the bears aren't used to finding food here anyway. One of the dads said, it's like, should I bring my gun because there's bears? I'm like, if you want, but I doubt we'll need it. So, but of course, there's other predators that might want to get a chicken.
Yeah.
So I'm like, what am I going to do with these chickens? I kind of don't want them in the cabin with us. But I don't really want like a fox or a wolf or something to find them and bust the cage open. This cage wasn't built, I don't think, to keep wolves out. You could disassemble the cage with panels that they snap together. So,
oh boy.
I could totally see a wolf or a bear just busting right through that. So I'm like, oh, the outhouse. The outhouse is kind of is almost like a tiny wood log cabin, sort of.
Yep.
And so I stuck them in the outhouse and shut the door.
And weren't going to leave them in the vehicle overnight because it would perfume the vehicle.
Yeah, that's true. But anyway, so we just stuck them in the outhouse. I guess poor chickens. I don't know how good their smellers are, but... The second day, first, we did fishing in the morning. It wasn't that eventful, except it was kind of a soft, misty rain for a good part of us, so we just wore our rain ponchos. The older boys took off. They went a different direction, and they actually found a spot under a bridge on a river, so that was cool. We went to the nearby lake with the younger boys. We cooked lunch, and then for supper was the chickens. So we got the chickens, brought them out. And I'm picturing, because again, I've never done this. I'm picturing we grab the chickens, we start taking them toward the slaughter area, and they start freaking out and flapping and squawking. And I guess it didn't occur to me that like they have no idea what's coming.
What's going on.
They were fine. So we're trying to plan out. We got seven boys. We're trying to involve all of them, you know, to some extent. And so I'm like, okay, well, how are we going to do this? And all the kids brought hatchets and machetes and big knives and stuff. So we decided that this big old machete-type knife, it was the sharpest one, so we figured that was the best one to use. And so the guy who says, I'm an expert at slaughtering chickens, turns to me and says, so how do you want to do this? I'm like, what are you asking me for? You're the expert.
Oh, he would do that. Yeah, he would do that.
What are you putting this on me for? He's like, well, there's a lot of ways to do it. I'm like, well, tell me somewhere. He's like, well, we could lay it on a log. One boy hold the head and the other boy hold the legs and just stretch a little bit. And somebody, another kid drop the hatchet down or whatever. And I'm thinking, like, I'm just picturing if you miss, you hit somebody's hand. Like, I don't like this. I'm probably the least concerned about safety of the people that I know. But that bothered me a lot. Like, I don't really want somebody's hand getting chopped off or sliced into.
And you didn't bring a traffic cone, because I think you found out later that my son-in-law, that's the method they use.
Oh, yeah. You stick the chicken head first into the big part of the cone, and then the head sticks out the small part, and then you just... I saw a video of somebody doing that with ducks.
Yep.
So I guess I never thought it with chickens. But no, I hadn't heard of the... but no, we didn't have any kind of cone or that wasn't... So what we finally settled on was you could hang them by their feet, and then you would tie a rope around the neck so the hand isn't so close, and then you can pull on the rope, stretch a little bit, chop the head off, and then the chicken is hanging upside down, the blood can drain, and he can't run around. I've personally never seen a chicken with its head cut off running around, but I've heard enough.
And you've referenced it many times. Many a time.
Yes.
You look like.
Yeah, it's a saying. Figure of speech. So we did that, and maybe I should have done a trigger warning if anybody doesn't like animals being slaughtered or stories about it. Stop listening. A long time ago. So, but this is the detail part, I guess. So we're like, okay, somebody grab the chicken. Somebody put the rope on the feet. You know, we had this whole planned out, who's going to do what. Again, I was all nervous that this chicken was going to be fighting us the whole time. We did it, and we got him. I'm like, oh, that was easy. The chicken didn't fight at all. He kind of flapped his wings as we flipped him upside down a little bit. But one of the boys got the knife. They were all ready, hanging upside down. Whack! And kind of missed, sort of. Like, okay, hurry up. I don't want to torture animals. I have no interest. Let's end its life as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
I was having a little trouble watching it. So at one point, then its head was like hanging partway off.
Okay.
And he's just like, whack, 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 whack.
Oh, my goodness.
And the chicken, now he's flapping his wings and whatever. I think it was hanging on by skin for the most part at that point.
Right,
so it
right.
was already done, you know. Yeah. But again, their muscles keep going. And anyway, the head came off, and then we waited for a minute or whatever for it to stop flapping. And so we took it down and laid it on top of the cage to pluck it. I don't remember exactly at one point, but one of my younger boys, he's about 9 years old. So we were like walking away, and he was like visibly tearing up and like shaking. And at first he was telling me like he wanted to do the chopping of the head at one point. Then we only had two chickens and seven boys. So obviously.
Yeah.
So but we're walking away. He was all upset. And I'm like, are you okay, bud? He's like, that was terrible, that poor chicken. And he was all worried about the chicken. I'm like, oh, well, so you don't want to do the chopping next on the next one? He's like, yes, I do, because I want to do it right.
Oh, my goodness.
I don't remember which boy did it. I don't think it was him, but whatever. That was just a totally 180 from what I was thinking. So, and I'm like, calm down. It was hanging on by skin. He was probably dead for most of that, you know, already. His head was already off. So we're plucking that chicken. And I don't remember if it was the first or second one, but the second one went smoother. We were a little more careful. We figured out a slightly better way to do it.
Did they involve boiling water at all?
No. I know I've heard of this, but I was counting on the expert, and he didn't really give me much to go So we're plucking the chicken. Bunch of us are all pulling feathers off. And all of a sudden, we hear, ah! And we all, like, jump back, like, what is happening? He's still alive. And I'm, like, thinking, like, how can he be squawking with no head? How is he squawking at all? He's not alive. And we kind of were like, we all jumped back and we were like frozen for a few seconds. And we're like, I'm like, wait a minute. And so I put my hand on his chest and pushed. I'm like, yeah. Oh, it's like
whoopee
an airbag.
Whoopee cushion.
It's, what's that?
Whoopee cushion.
Whoopee cushion.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. I thought this was like some zombie chicken or something. Like, oh, and then we started like, everybody's pushing on it.
That was a game, man. Yeah, yeah.
Like, I guess the voice box was still in there.
Yeah.
Anyway, so then the expert chicken slaughterer, he was helping his boys cut into the chicken, get the meat out and whatever, cut it all up. And he's explaining, he's like, don't cut into the gallbladder?
Yeah.
He's like, do not get the gallbladder. Be very careful, because if that thing busts open, it's going to ruin the meat and you will not want to eat it.
Yep.
So he's like cutting. He's like, okay, say stop, slap, stop. And then green splatter everywhere. And we're like, oh, no. And then he's like, okay, we're going to cut chunks of meat out that we know are clean because it didn't get all over everything.
Yeah.
So that's what we did. They just cut chunks of meat out and put them on a plate. And then, anyway, the second chicken went better. I had no idea that there was a difference between freshly slaughtered meat. It was alive an hour or two ago, and you're cooking it and eating it now.
Yeah.
I had no idea how delicious and fresh and good that is compared to chicken you buy at the grocery store.
That's been frozen, yes.
Yeah, frozen.
Slaughtered weeks ago.
Right. And we just cooked it over open fire. We just put some seasoning on it. Just cut it into small enough chunks that it didn't take forever to cook.
Yeah.
Just threw it on a grill that we hung on a tripod over the campfire. Oh, it was so good.
Yep. Yep.
And then somebody's like, oh, it was your son. He's like, this is like chicken crack cocaine or something. This is like addictive.
And
somebody says, Tim's like getting high over there. I just kept eating it. I was trying to be careful. I didn't want to be a pig and not leave anyone for everyone else. But I'm like, I'm going to keep eating this if you guys don't.
Yep.
So I guess I should back up. So the first night, the idea was that they would stay in the shelters all night that they built. It was, so me and the other dads, we stayed up in the cabin chatting until about midnight or whatever, and finally went to bed. And I don't know, it wasn't much later, we hear a knock at the door. So I went downstairs, opened the door, I'm like, what's going on? They're like, this is terrible. We're sleeping on rocks and there's spiders crawling all over us.
And that was the younger boys?
Yes.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking like, well, if we would have brought a mosquito net and some foam pads, I guess that would have solved those issues, but we don't have them. They're like, can we just sleep in here tonight? I'm like, I guess I'm a softie. I'm like, sure, come on in. So they technically failed, I guess, but they didn't care anymore at that point. So they slept on the couch. And then must have been 4 or 5 a.m., we were wakened by the older boys talking and laughing out right outside the cabin. And we're like, what in the heck? So the other dad gets up, and he goes out there and talks to them for a little bit. And then they all come in, and there's plenty of space for everyone to sleep in there. And they slept in there the rest of the morning.
Oh, so everybody flunked.
Everybody failed the first night. It was still a success. We all had fun. We all loved it. It was really fun. But their thing was, like, they tried to stick it out, but there was another thing. No mosquito netting, and there were mosquitoes. And they were like, oh, it's terrible. Just buzzing in our ears constantly and smacking our faces the whole night. Mm-hmm. So they didn't get any sleep until they came into the cabin. So what they had decided to do at about 4 in the morning, they just came to the cabin and started a fire and just sat around the fire and talked till they got loud enough that we woke up. So the other dad, he's like, well, you guys need some sleep, so get in here. Second night, nope, not even. There was just an assumption that nobody was sleeping outside. But yeah, so if I had to do it over again, I would say, well, bring some padding and some mosquito nets at least. I don't know. If you bring a tent, that's not survival-y enough, I guess. It's fun to build your own shelter, so.
Yeah, well, I mean, you just never know when it could be handy. And if you've done it once before, it's like, oh, I know what we can do.
Right.
I know what should work. I know what we did wrong last time, so I won't do that this time.
Right, yep. But then it's not survival. Real survival. You can't prepare.
That is what a survival trip like that is, though, is preparing to be able to do it for real if you had to.
I suppose, yeah. And, you know, from the last episode where I was talking about the fact I was slightly terrified sleeping in the halfway open in the middle of the woods, pitch black night, I remembered that I have already done something that it was even more rugged than that. When I was in Boy Scouts, at one point, they take each boy out and give them a sleeping bag and a flashlight, and that's it. And they take you out in the middle of the woods at night, and they hike along, like, they point at one of the boys, you take 50 paces that way, and that's where you sleep. And then they march a little further, and the next boy, you go 50 paces that way, that's where you're going to sleep. And so everybody has to spend one night, like, essentially completely alone. That was kind of terrifying. Like, and yeah. I was like 14 years old or something, you know.
Was that up at Kiona?
Yes.
Oh, boy. Yeah, where there, you know, there are bears in that region.
Right.
Yeah.
Were your boys in Boy Scouts? Or no?
No, but I was. I never made it to Kiona, though. I mean, I always heard about it. And,
oh, really?
And I just never went.
Your troop never went to Kiona?
The troop did. I'm not sure how I got out of that.
Oh, it was always fun. I mean, I didn't totally appreciate that night alone in the woods, but
yeah.
Speaking of Kiona, one of my memories is, so next to the lodge, there was like a main lodge, and then right next to it, there's this hill, and we did winter camping also.
Oh, yeah.
And on this hill, everybody would either bring their sleds or cut up pieces of cardboard and go sledding down the hill. And it's always like the first day that you get there, you're checking in at the main lodge, and the kids are, then you go slide down the hill for a while. There was this kind of icy patch down the hill, and so there were these kids. So I'm like just like walking along, look around. All of a sudden, these kids run at me and shove me, just perfect strangers, you know. They just shove me, and I go sliding all the way to the bottom on this ice patch, and they're all laughing and whatever. And so I guess it was kind of a tradition. Then you get up, and then you join the boys who are doing the pushing, if you choose.
That must be a required feature at every Boy Scout camp thing, because Norseland was the same way. He had the main lodge at the top there. And that was a sliding hill, and one of my classmates broke his collarbone on it.
Oh, wait a minute. Maybe that was Northland.
Because it definitely has the lodges right at the top, and there's the ski area. That's where Alec, he broke his collarbone.
Oh, really?
Not skiing, I think, just sliding at the boys' camp out we did, very last one we did.
Oh, okay. Huh. Maybe it was Northland. I forgot about Northland.
And the Quonsets at Northland in the summer, or the winter, I was sick as a dog one time. Got there, and the next morning I was just sick as a dog. And one of my classmates' dads was the scoutmaster, and he drove me home. I had, that's the sleeping bag I used the whole time. So one of my brothers was in Korea in the Army, got drafted, and he had an Army-issue sleeping bag from that era, which was big and wide and heavy. And it had when you rolled it up, then it had this long piece of canvas. I mean, the outer shell of it was canvas, but you could wrap around it, you know, to wrap up the sleeping bag. But what you did is that canvas was long enough and it had this two tie strings on either side. The idea was you could actually put sticks in the ground and pull the canvas up over it so that you had something covering your head at night to shield it from either rain or just dew. But that was a military issue sleeping bag. But that was the one I used all that time.
That reminds me of we did winter camping, and what we usually did, it wouldn't rain, it would snow, so we didn't have to worry about getting rained on.
Yep.
So what we would normally do is find this, like, a massive pine tree where you could fit, like, four boys underneath it and lay a tarp down and whatever cushioning we want and then just sleep under a big pine tree.
Oh, cool.
And, yeah, of course, and it would made a little, like, because the snow, if it was 1 or 2 or 3 feet under the tree, it wasn't. So it was like kind of made this
depression.
Depression under the tree. And the branches would come down and pretty well all the way to the snow.
Yeah.
So it kind of made a little shelter. And it was, I don't know, it was really fun.
That'd be kind of cool.
Yeah, it was cool. There was one year that there was a shelter that was like already built when we got there. It was somebody put up, it's kind of like this big, long lean-to. It was a big, a log at an angle, and then a bunch of smaller logs going that from the ground at an angle. So it made a nice shelter. We fit, I don't know, 6 of us under there or something. One year, our scoutmaster, we got there, and everybody's picking their places where they're going to sleep, what tree they were going to sleep under. And he pulls out all this cardboard and starts cutting it into hexagons or octagons. We're like, what the heck are you doing? And He's cutting it all up. Then he starts duct taping them together, and he made a dome out of it.
A dodecahedron.
Okay. Yeah, right.
Fun. Cool.
Yeah, and then he covered it in snow, and there was a little door that he could open and close, and he just climbed.
That's cheating.
It was really cool.
That's using the old noodle.
So he just climbed inside there and slept for the night, and it was nice and warm because the snow insulates, you know.
Yeah.
Like an igloo, basically.
Nice.
So that was cool. There was one year that they had to call off the winter camping because it was like 20 below zero. They decided that was a little too much.
That's too extreme.
Right, right. And the one thing I didn't, I always loved the winter camping. The one thing that I hated was putting your boots on in the morning because they were like usually sweaty the night before. Yeah. And then they were frozen like ice inside of them. And if you had something laying on top of them or whatever, then they were mushed flat-ish and frozen that way. And so you could barely get your foot in. And then another thing is you drink a lot of hot chocolate.
Yeah.
Especially the night before sitting around the fire. And then you wake up and you're like, you gotta go, but you gotta put your boots on before you can go. That part wasn't great, but
that was the dreaded part of the winter one was the freezing cold, and you just hoped you didn't need to sit down.
Yeah, right.
It was freezing cold, literally.
And then the other thing about the Wisconsin trip, we did a little devotional the second morning. It was Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Saturday morning, we had breakfast and then sat around the fire, read some Bible verses, and talked and prayed. And
yep.
That was cool. But we wanted to make sure we incorporated that into it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So the year we went, which was the very last thing that we did is the men and boys, that stretch of, I think there was five. Yeah, it was five events because the first thing was that really late fall trip to Jay Cook State Park. It was cold, but everybody still talks about it. And the last one was we had set up a troop for the church just loosely because they'd still let you use the facility. So that's how we were able to use Northland because we were trying to figure out, okay, what are we going to do for the next fall camp out for the men and boys? And so we actually had a charter and we did Northland. So we all stayed in the main lodge, which had a bunch of bunk beds in it at that time. They're all wood bunk beds. What all did we do? We did some work projects Saturday during the first part of the day. Chris had a saw and a pole, and so we did some tree trimming for them, some miscellaneous tasks that they had that we could serve them. And then we ran over to Fort Ridgely State Park. That was our outing event that day. Drove over there and checked that out. Went on a little hike for a while.
I think I went only on one of those trips back then because my boys were probably 1 and 2, 3 years old or not born yet during those years. Kind of wish I still had gone, though. It wasn't like only if you have teenage boys or something you could go.
Right.
But I'm a little regretful that I didn't join in on all those trips.
The boys still talk about them, especially the first one. Yeah, talk about camping. So we don't have nearly as colorful family camping stories. But the very first time my wife and I camped after getting married was when our oldest was about 10 months old. So it was in September. Must have been late September because it was cold that night. I don't even remember what we used for a tent, but we had him between us. So he was less than a year old. And it was definitely cold, but it was cloudy and icky. And I can't remember if it started raining partway through Saturday, but we went with Chris and his family and another couple. We finally decided to call it, and everybody was so happy that we decided we were just going to bail out in the middle of the afternoon. So that was our first outing as a married couple, and that wasn't necessarily a winning situation.
Yeah, right.
But the best was probably the ones at Ironwood. That was fun, especially the first one, because everybody's, the first time we've done it, the church, when we all went.
Yep, yep. I remember our daughter was still nursing at the time.
Yep.
And we went, and we had to wake up in the middle of the night, feed the baby still.
Yep.
Speaking of raining, I feel like 80% of the times we've gone camping, it rains. I don't.
Yep.
But not every time you stay dry, even in the tent.
Yeah. Well, didn't that one time in Prairie River, didn't we stretch out a couple of ropes and hang a tarp over part of it to try and
kind of for, over the picnic tables.
Yeah.
Kind of for a communal place to hang out in the rain.
And then when we did the Men and Boys thing, we did 2017, I think we did that over by
something like that.
Over east of here, not real far. And we had the same deal there. We got that big tarp up there because it rained for a while on Saturday.
Right. And that was kind of expected to be sort of a big storm.
Yeah.
Not just a drizzle, you know.
Thankfully, it wasn't a really big deal, but it rained enough. And so we were I have lots of pictures of that trip.
Yeah. I show my kids pictures from that, and they're like, oh my gosh, I looked so weird, because they're buck teeth or missing teeth or whatever.
Yeah.
Some of them. Anyway, speaking of raining with camping, one of my actually fondest memories was a time that it rained with our Boy Scout troop. So I had, he was like my best friend in Boy Scouts. We went to the same school, but we didn't really hang out much at school. But we were like always connected at the hip in Boy Scouts. And his name was Tim also. And so they guys made jokes. Like if somebody saw one of us without the other, they're like, it's only half a Tim. What's happening? Like, where's the other half? So we usually ended up sleeping in the same tent. You know, there's usually two boys to a tent. And we had these, our first scoutmaster. I always thought he was, must have been like 150 years old. He was so old. And he was so old school. He would run around at 6 in the morning or whatever it was. Chop, chop, time to get up, time to get up, boys, get up, get the breakfast going. And we're just like, get out of here. What are you doing? But we had these old, again, must be 150-year-old canvas tents.
That kind of a teal blue, green-ish.
Yep, they
canvas.
Smelled kind of like mold.
Dank, yeah.
And they were not zippers. They were like tie strings or whatever. They were just triangle-shaped tents. And the two front flaps, you would pull them together and just tie them. And so that was not waterproof. That was not airtight, even close. And if it was windy and rainy enough, the wind would drive the rain sort of in through the cracks. So anyway, so we're camping in these things. After he retired as the scoutmaster, the first thing the new scoutmaster did was bought brand new tents and got rid of those old ones. So we're sleeping in these old tents and it was raining. And we wake up and there's puddles that we're sleeping in. And we were wet. Our sleeping bags were wet, and me and the other Tim. And so we were like in wet clothes. And it was probably 3 a.m. or something like that. And so we opened up our backpacks, which were also kind of wet. And we found the driest clothes that we could, changed into those, and went out. And again, kind of like you were saying at the church camp, but we had a big tarp over the picnic tables. And so, and we had a propane stove sitting there. And so we got some hot chocolate out because it was cold too, being wet in the middle of the night. And we boiled some water and we sat on the picnic table. Not like on the part that you sit in, but we sat up and whatever. I guess it was maybe a little drier there, out of the wind and more. And we sat there the rest of the night / morning just drinking hot chocolate and talking. And it was just so fun. I don't know. It was fun. I don't remember what we talked about, but I just remember thinking back and like, that was a blast. There was another trip that we went on with Boy Scouts. It was supposed to be like just the older boys, and it was supposed to be a kind of a survival thing. But we're supposed to build our own shelter out of, not tarps, but like sticks and grass and leaves and whatever. And we got, I don't know if it was a lake, I guess. Long, big lake. Anyway, so, but we had to canoe to the place that we were going to camp. And in the middle of the canoeing, it started downpouring like really bad. And we were just getting completely soaked to the bone. And we finally got to where we were going. We got out of the canoes, got our stuff. And the adults decided to have mercy on us. They were like, this is not, no, we're not going to make these guys build a shelter while it's downpouring. And then it's just going to be soaking wet the whole night anyway, no matter what you build at this point. But somebody knew that back in the woods, there was a teepee, like this massive, like you could fit 8 or 10 people in this thing. So we went to that, and they're like, all right, guys, this is where we're sleeping for the night. You do not have to build a shelter. We're like, yes. But it was so cool having a fire inside the shelter.
Yeah.
And that, I were actually were able to hang up our clothes around. We'd stretch some ropes inside from the poles, you know, that were holding the teepee up. I've always wanted to do that again, is, you know, build a teepee and put a fire inside. Because it's just so fun to actually be inside of a tent-like thing, but to have a fire also.
Yeah.
But again, so that turned out to be a really fun night, too.
So some of the best fictional camping stories have been written by Patrick McManus, who has shown up in a number of outdoors magazines. And so the first Men and Boys trip that we did up to Duluth, on the way back, Jim breaks this book out and says, here, let me read you some of these stories. And so here was Patrick McManus, A Fine and Pleasant Misery. And it was just a collection of his stories about camping, and they are just hysterical. One of the things he talked about was he talked about that there's two kinds of fires that you start when you're camping. One of them is called the smudge. That's just smoke everywhere. It's just and the other one is the inferno. And so if you're trying to cook over either the smudge or the inferno, you know, you're not going to get much cooked, or it's not right. going to be cooked to your liking.
Or it's going to be a little overcooked.
Yeah, it's going to be fried to a crisp. But he... So whether you've camped or not, you'll find this guy's stories hilarious. They're clean stories, best I can recall, because Jim read us like five or six of them on the way back on our way to Fuddruckers, which should almost be a profane word. But yeah, Patrick McManus, A Fine and Pleasant Misery, is one of the collections. I think there's a couple other ones. But he talks about camping stories, all these... canoeing gone wrong, paddling with the butt of a .30-06 as his paddle, and all his goofy named buddies. Wretch was one of them. And anyway, you gotta read it. Camping, outdoors, all kinds of things. It shows up in sports magazines. Very well done. Worth your time. Great read for some of your preteen and early teen boys.
Point is, take your boys camp.
Yeah.
And your girls. Sorry. I know our dads were boy-oriented, I guess.
Yeah, actually, that does make me think of, I had a hard time getting a grip on this. I don't know if I ever made it through many situations that were frustrating in some way or whatever. Trying to do something with the kids, like the classic thing would be camping and then it raining and it's like just miserable. And it's so easy to lose sight of, actually the fact is that you're together, you're having an experience, and you can still make it something not miserable, even if the conditions are not fun, but not dangerous. And in life in general, I think that's actually a struggle. But I see it, that you have to get straight what is the actual goal of the thing that you're doing, and don't let the stuff like conditions, like for camping, it was like, we're going to go have an experience together, and that's what we're going to do, and we're going to do it in an outdoor setting, and not lose sight of that that's actually why you're doing it. Mm-hmm. And it's okay if some of these other things, yeah, they make you uncomfortable. You'll sleep in your own bed at home tomorrow night. I mean, you can make it through one night.
Right.
And especially as a dad, you can either make it miserable for everybody because you're miserable.
Right.
Or you can, you know, suck it up a little bit, cupcake, and not rob them, because they don't think about all these responsibilities and all the wherefores and whyfores and the complications. They're just there. You're guiding them, and if you have a good attitude while you're guiding them, they don't think about all the other stuff. That's just not even in their universe, so they'll have a good time.
Mm-hmm. There's definitely that frustration factor that I've had camping or on other trips. Like, things aren't going right. You need to get in line, do what I say. This is not working. It goes out of control a little bit. The worst is, like, packing up to go home, I feel like.
Oh, yes.
Like, I feel like I'm doing most of the work.
It never ends. It takes forever. We're never going to get out of here.
Like somebody I know said, camping is work before you leave. It's work when you get there. It's work when you get home.
Yeah.
So you got to love it, I guess.
It's the most expensive weekend you're going to spend. It's like you get all this stuff and food and supplies and all this stuff, and we could have stayed at home cheaper.
Yeah,
much. Right. We could even went out to eat. It'd been cheaper, probably.
Right.